friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Dan Friedel, and for VOA's Sunny Young in Washington, welcome to the January 25th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Sporty Friday greetings to you all, and we hope you're excited for a great weekend ahead. We'll start off with Samson O'Malley, who joins us today with news of the draw from the CAF Confederations Cup.
The draws for the CAF Confederations Cup, which took place earlier this week in Cairo, Egypt. In Group A, Hassania Agadir of Morocco, AS Otoho of Congo, RS Bakane of Morocco and Raja Casablanca of Morocco will all slog it out for the top spot from that group. Group B have Etoile du Sahel of Tunisia, Rangers of Nigeria, Salites of Burkina Faso and CS Sfaxien of Tunisia, while in Group C, the likes of Zesco United of Zambia, Al Hilal of Sudan, Asante Kotoko of Ghana, Nkana of Zambia will all battle for the quarterfinal spot, while Group D will see Goma Hia of Kenya, N.A. Hussein Day of Algeria, Petro Atletico of Angola, Zamalek of Egypt, all will battle for the top spots from the group. Reacting to the draws and prospects of the teams is a football analyst, Alfred Sarki.
I must confess, this year's Champions CAF Confederations Cup actually could go for the CAF Champions League, because basically we have perennial winners of the CAF Champions League playing in the CAF Confederations Cup. All the groups are interesting because I see the North African teams, we have so many of them, so I see them in almost all the groups, so I expect that basically the North African teams will come out.
In the meantime, Cameroonian side Cotton Sport Garoua have reported Ghanaian club Asante Kotoko to the Confederation of African Football over what they described as irregularity of Kwame Bonsu after their two-legged encounter in the playoff phase of the Confederations Cup. The Cameroonian side warned the Ghanaian club to be thrown out of the Confederations Cup group stages after claiming that documents tendered during their matches with the Ghanaian club carried Kwame Bonsu's name in jersey number 8, while the documents of the reverse fixture have the same player's name affiliated to the number 3 jersey, which is a violation of Article 6.5 of the competition's rules. Edmond Anka, a member of Asante Kotoko's management, has dismissed the allegations.
Kwame Bonsu will never ever wear number 8 jersey, because even in that jersey, the player's names are at the back of the jersey. So how can a number 3 jersey, which has a name by name Kwame Bonsu, wear number 8 jersey by name Kwame Boyan? So they have no case at all. They are jokers.
And finally, in athletics news, World and Commonwealth 5,000 meters champion Helen Obiri will be chasing her fourth title at this year's Kenya Defense Forces Cross-Country Championships set for today at Kahawa Garrison. Helen Obiri, who is also the Africa 5,000 meters champion, said her ultimate dream is to represent Kenya for the first time at the World Cross-Country slated for March 30th this year in Aarhus in Denmark. And that's it. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thank you, Samson. We wish you a great weekend. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sunny Young in Washington, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. As the Australian Open heads into its final weekend, our friend Down Under, Craig Gabriel, updates us with news of the men's final and a preview of the women's final. Welcome to the show, Craig.
Novak Djokovic was on a mission, and he had a certain look in his eye when he played Frenchman Lucas Pouille, who was at this stage of a major for the first time. Before now, he'd never even been past the first round of the Australian Open, so full cheers to him. But with Djokovic across the net, the 24-year-old Frenchman was outclassed at every opportunity and angle. He was hapless as Djokovic won the first 7 games of the match, and he was striking the ball from corner to corner. It was as if the ball was attached to his racket with a string. Pouille would have been looking for a hole to crawl into and was probably relieved that the 83-minute bombardment of shots from the world number one was over. The score was 6-love, 6-2, 6-2. And it's the 7th time that Djokovic has reached the Australian Open final, and he's never lost one. He and Rafa Nadal play the final, and they've met 52 times, and Djokovic leads their series 27-25. Sam Stosur and Zhang Shuai won the women's doubles final, beating Kikil Mladenovic and Tamira Babos 6-3, 6-4. Day 13 is coming up, and the women's final should provide fans with a great battle and a very hard-hitting one. Petra Novak Fedova and Naomi Osaka play for the first time, and the world number one ranking is on the line, and for both, it would be the first time achieving that. If Osaka does, she'd be the first Asian player to ever be ranked world number one. Kvitova has lost just 28 games, the fewest number at the Australian Open since 1994, and to the winner goes $4.1 million. Craig Gabriel, VOA Sport, Melbourne.
Thank you, Craig. That men's final will be a great matchup, and I'm curious to see who will be the women's world number one after this tournament. We have been following the sad news of the search for the lost airplane of Cardiff City striker Emiliano Sala of Argentina this week. My colleague Gwen Uten joins us now with an update.
Hey there, Dan. Coast Guard officials have officially called off their search for the single-engine plane carrying Emiliano Sala and pilot David Ibbotson. Their aircraft went missing Monday night over the English Channel, and since then, rescuers have used every moment of daylight to scour a 1,700-square-mile area in a search-and-rescue operation. UK and French authorities held on to hope that the 28-year-old Argentine and his pilot would be found safely inside a life raft and out of the water's icy temperatures. However, days later, there has been no trace of the aircraft or the two men who were on board. And on Thursday, Guernsey Harbormaster Captain David Barker announced the search had been terminated.
Earlier today, I had a meeting with my Coast Guard officers, and having completed that, looked at our search activities to date and our options for the future, and consulted with our equivalent organisation in the UK, I've taken the decision to terminate our search, and that decision has been difficult, as you can imagine, not least because there are a huge number of people both here in the UK and in France who've been involved in this search over the last 3 days, all of whom, including myself, had hoped for a positive outcome, but that's not been the case. But more importantly, because I'm well aware that this will be very unwelcome news for the family and friends of the two occupants of the missing aircraft.
Sala, a top scorer for French football club Nantes, had just signed with Cardiff City Premier League club. He was en route to Cardiff in Wales when his plane lost contact with air traffic control. The pilot made no distress call. However, hours later, a voice recording of Sala emerged, where he's heard saying the aircraft he was flying in seemed to be, quote, falling to pieces. Captain Barker expressed his condolences to the families of both men and assured them this case was not closed.
First and foremost, our thoughts are with the family and friends of David Ibbotson and Emiliano Sala, for whom this must be a very difficult time. I can't begin to imagine how they must be feeling, but I do understand, and I hope they will find some comfort from the fact that we are not closing this incident. Although we are stopping searching, the incident remains open, and we are continuing with our broadcasts to ships and aircraft which are passing through the area and asking them to report anything which may be linked to the missing aircraft.
Earlier this week, thousands of Nantes supporters held a vigil for Sala, and France's Soccer Federation postponed Nantes' French Cup fixture, scheduled for Wednesday. Fans in Cardiff also paid tribute to Sala outside their stadium. And on Thursday, Cardiff City owner Tan Sri Vincent Tan issued a statement that read in part, "We were looking forward to providing Emiliano with the next step in his life and career. The response from the football community has been truly touching, and we place on record our sincere thanks to those who have sent messages of support. We also thank everyone involved with the search and rescue operation and continue to pray for Emiliano, David Ibbotson, and their families." And we here at the Sunny Side of Sports will keep you informed with any updates as they develop. Dan, I'll hand it back over to you.
Thanks for the update on the sad story, Gwen. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Now, speaking of international soccer, our friend Iron Mike Mbonye joins us now with this chat with Toyin Ibitoye, the press officer for the Nigerian national soccer team, the Super Eagles. Mike wanted to know if the squad really does offer opportunities to Nigerian players who are not playing abroad.
Yeah, the local players always have a chance in the team, but we're talking about the Super Eagles now. The Super Eagles is open to all players, whether you are based at home or abroad. The best players, best Nigerian players, are the ones that get a chance to play for the Super Eagles. So if, wherever you are based, if you have the quality needed by the coaches to play at that level, you will always get your chance.
We have the officials and coaches, technical crew of the Super Eagles, been monitoring the local Nigerian league to scout for players.
Yes, of course they have. And since the new coach took over, we've had about 20 local players who have come to the camp at one time or the other. So there's always a chance for a player of good quality, no matter where they play, to get a chance, and they're all being well monitored.
What about members of the Nigerian under 20 team? Are you also looking inwards to see if there are good players you can get from there for the Super Eagles?
Of course, all the coaches are working together. It's a close synergy. So all the players under 17, under 20, even the Olympic team, once you have that quality and you're identified as a player with a lot of potentials, you get your chance to play for the team. So it's always open for all age grade team players, provided you have that quality to get your chance in the main team, Super Eagles.
Meanwhile, have you spotted one or two that you feel that are good?
Yes, there are a lot of young players in the under 20 team that have even played for the Super Eagles before at the Chan level, even the Olympic team as well. So there's always that chance every time.
Thank you, Mike. As I mentioned on Thursday's show, there's quite a lot of buzz brewing here in the U.S. about the championship game of American-style football coming up in about 9 days. That's the Rams of Los Angeles going up against the New England Patriots, who are based just outside of Boston, Massachusetts. That'll be Super Bowl 53. So we're joined here now on the Sunny Side of Sports by Cindy Boren, a sports reporter for The Washington Post. Welcome to the show, Cindy.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So, Cindy, we've talked about this the last couple of shows this week, that the big sporting event coming up 2 Sundays from now in the United States will be the 53rd Super Bowl, featuring the New England Patriots and the Los Angeles Rams. It'll be taking place in the big new indoor stadium in Atlanta, Georgia. And Cindy, it feels like Tom Brady, the star quarterback for the Patriots, and Bill Belichick, the kind of gauntlet-carrying head coach for the Patriots, have made the Super Bowl their own personal backyard. Do you think people are tired of seeing these two guys playing in the big game, what seems like every year?
Well, there's certainly more than familiarity. I think people are a little bit tired of it. The Patriots, of course, are advancing to the Super Bowl for the 9th time in the era of Bill Belichick and Tom Brady. And, you know, last year's, what is this now, the 3rd straight year, I guess, that they've advanced? And last year's game against the Eagles was sort of an anticlimactic. I mean, it was an exciting game, don't get me wrong, and I think a lot of people were rooting for the Eagles. But according to television ratings, they were down. I think there is some Patriots fatigue going on.
So just so our listeners can understand how impressive this run is for the Patriots getting to the Super Bowl and winning the Super Bowl, the last time we saw some of these teams make the Super Bowl their own kind of private playing field, there were teams like the Dallas Cowboys maybe in the 1990s, before that the San Francisco 49ers, and going back before that, you had the Pittsburgh Steelers in the 1970s. But to see a team basically expect to be in the Super Bowl every season for about a decade and a half is pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, really, what, 18 years? I think their first appearance was in 2002, the game after the 2001 season. So, you know, 17 years, we're getting used to this. And it's also the thing that's remarkable about the Patriots run is not only is it longer than all those teams you mentioned, but they've done it with a lot of turnover on the squad. You know, Bill Belichick doesn't hesitate to cut players. He doesn't hesitate to move people out, move people around at positions. And, you know, he keeps coming back. This year's team was a little disappointing. I mean, they still, you know, were successful, obviously, during the regular season. But there were rumors about, you know, and whispers about whether the dynasty might be over, that, you know, Brady looked a little old. He's 41 now. And, you know, that Belichick might have lost his magic, that other people might have, you know, kind of figured out how to beat them. And guess what? You know, when the playoffs started, there they were again. They're almost like, I keep calling them vampires. You know, you've got to kind of drive a wooden stake through their heart to kill them. You just can't get rid of them. And the Chiefs found that out, you know, and I don't pretend to know how the Super Bowl will end, but why would anyone in their right mind count out the Patriots?
Yeah, right now it looks like the early line is that the Patriots are favored by 2.5 points, which, of course, in professional football in the United States, you can't score a half a point, but it looks like it might be a field goal kind of game, which, of course, the Patriots have won in the past in the Super Bowl. So, you know, would you say that the Patriots having a slight advantage seems like a fair early line for what this game is shaping up to be in about 10 days from now?
I think it does, simply from the point of view of experience and, you know, the Belichick-Brady angle. I do think most people look at the talent on the Rams and think that the Rams have a more talented team, a better defense, certainly. They have possibly, you know, and they probably can match the Patriots on offensive weapons, quarterbacks aside, although, you know, not to insult Jared Goff, the Rams quarterback there, but, you know, Tom Brady's body of work speaks for itself, especially in big games. You know, he always sort of reverts to the kid who was the 199th pick in the NFL draft, and he somehow puts a chip on his shoulder, and, you know, it makes him very, very difficult to beat. The Rams, you know, for the Rams, this is kind of a new experience for them. Now, they've been to the Super Bowl. In fact, the Patriots' run in the Super Bowls in this modern era began against the Rams when they beat the Rams in 2002. But, you know, this is a different Rams team. Apart from Brady still being on the Patriots, yeah, the Patriots are a different team too. But, you know, this Rams group, they're now based in Los Angeles. They used to be in St. Louis. This is a totally different kettle of fish for the Rams.
So speaking of the Rams, it's a team that probably a lot of our listeners haven't heard that much about. The unique thing is that they actually started off in my hometown of Cleveland many, many, many decades ago. And, you know, they established themselves in Los Angeles, West Coast team, in the, you know, notable team in the 70s and 80s. And I guess it was in the early 90s they moved to St. Louis, made St. Louis their home for a while. And the last time they were in the Super Bowl, they were the St. Louis Rams. And now they're back in Los Angeles. They have this young coach in his early 30s, Sean McVay. Do you think that the Rams have a fan base that is intact enough to really appreciate the fact that they're in the Super Bowl this year?
That's the million-dollar question. I'm not going to say that Los Angeles fans aren't savvy. They certainly are, and I think they enjoy football, but they've gone so long without having a football team that, you know, they've kind of gotten used to it. And, you know, the NFL is now such a broadly popular sport that you don't really have to be a fan of the team in the city in which you live. You know, you can watch your team anywhere. And I think someone had a video of Rams fans, quote-unquote Rams fans, in a bar during the playoff game and the divisional championship game, and they were almost doing a golf clap, you know, when they scored a touchdown. And you're like, this is where they are right now. You know, the enthusiasm is, it's there, I guess, but, you know, they're playing in this gigantic Coliseum right now, and when they play home games, it's difficult for them to fill it, so consequently you get a lot of fans from other teams there. And, you know, it's kind of hard to judge right now. I mean, if this is a dynasty, maybe there will be some excitement that builds. But, you know, I mean, right now it's Lakers. The Lakers have had a dynasty and a lot of success. Dodgers, but, you know, the Rams are kind of meh right now, I think, in L.A.
That's Cindy Boren, a sports reporter for The Washington Post. I'm Dan Friedel, filling in for Sonny Young here on the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. We'll have a little more from Cindy on Monday, talking about the television commercials being prepped for the game. But I also asked Cindy about some other big sports news in the U.S. from this week. So, Cindy, one of the other things I wanted to move on to, it's a conversation that people have been having in the U.S. the last couple days, and that is about the Baseball Hall of Fame in very small town in upstate New York. It's Cooperstown, New York, a kind of beautiful place that comes alive in the summer. I'm not quite sure how things are there in January.
But, well, I hope you like to ski.
But the... it seems like there's a lot of conversation this time of the year when it's announced which former professional baseball players and people from the baseball world are getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. A couple of big names this year, Mike Mussina, who played only about 35 miles away from Washington, D.C. for a big chunk of his career in Baltimore. Edgar Martinez, who played for the Seattle Mariners, a extremely formidable hitter, one of the first players that's going into the Hall of Fame who didn't really have a position that he played on the field. He was mostly known for being a designated hitter and batting only and not playing in the field that much. But the big news really was this all-time great New York Yankees player, Mariano Rivera, a relief pitcher, getting into the Hall of Fame with a unanimous vote. Seems to be capturing a lot of attention this week, and I thought maybe you could explain to our listeners why that is an interesting note.
Well, Mariano did something that no other player has done. You know, Babe Ruth couldn't accomplish it. Name any other player you care to. The players are selected for the Hall of Fame by a vote of the Baseball Writers of America. It's an association, and this is their thing each year. And the votes were unanimous. No one has been unanimous before, and there was some question whether Rivera would be. A writer in the Boston area was saying a couple months ago that he was not going to submit his ballot. He wasn't going to, you know, vote against him or, you know, leave not fill in the next to his name, but he wasn't going to vote. Well, he changed his mind and ended up voting and voted for Rivera, of course. You know, there's some question because Rivera was a relief pitcher. He came in, you know, and would get three outs and get the save. There, some people believe that the save is not a valid statistic. You know, it doesn't require a great deal of work to get one. But Rivera was, you know, he was unhittable. I used to work in New York. I saw a lot of the Yankees. And, you know, he was an amazing force on that Yankees dynasty. And, you know, if anybody deserves to go in unanimously, it's certainly Mariano Rivera.
Thank you, Cindy. That's Cindy Boren of The Washington Post. We'll have more of our chat with Cindy on Monday's show. One quick note as we wrap up the Friday edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Yesterday, we mentioned that Tiger Woods was kicking off his season in San Diego at Torrey Pines. Wanted to let you know that Woods finished the first round at 2 under par. Good for tying for 53rd place after the first round. And he's 8 strokes behind the leader, John Rahm of Spain, who had a shockingly good round, going 10 strokes under par with a 62 in San Diego on Thursday. That wraps up the January 25th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Patrick Dea. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Dan Friedel in for Sunny Young in Washington, and that's The Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Hello. This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is Science in a Minute.
We know that certain colors can influence how a food product should taste. Like when we're about to drink a yellow-colored beverage, many of us probably think we're about to taste something tart like lemonade. Penn State University researchers Molly Higgins and John Hayes wanted to find out how people learn to associate colors with tastes and whether they could be taught to link colors with completely different tastes. Over four sessions, the researchers got subjects to sip liquids with new colors they had specifically selected, avoiding any preconceived color taste pairings. Then the subjects were given uncolored liquids and were asked to pair each flavor with the new colors. It turns out the subjects picked the correct color taste match 59% of the time. The research will be published in the journal Food Quality and Preference. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscasts, covering Africa and the world news. Tune in on top of each hour, 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.